I'm Denise.
She's a non-fiction editor.
And I'm Louise.
She's a fiction editor. And together,
we're the Editing Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Editing Podcast. This week, we're doing something a bit different. We're on the other side of the mic being interviewed.
That's right. Denise and I are going to answer questions about our new book series, Notes from the Podcast. And here to interview us is Liv Cowell, who does the post-production for the podcast. Hello, Liv.
Hello, everyone.
So regular listeners may have noticed that Liv has an accent eerily similar to Denise's and that they share a surname.
She might be my daughter.
What do you mean?
We can either confirm or deny.
No. Oh, well, I was okay. Going to say, what do you mean, might? I want a definitive answer here.
All right, okay. I must confess, she is my daughter.
Yes.
Poor her. Anyway, who do I mean by her?
Well, let's leave it at that.
Yeah. So anyway, Liv's in charge of this episode, so we're going to put her in the driving seat. Over to you, Liv.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Louise. I'm very excited to be here, actually. Long-time listener, first-time interviewer, caller. I suppose. Yeah, first-time caller. Normally, I do all the post-production, as you say, so I, you know, take everything that you speak about and I tidy it up ever so slightly just to get it ready for the final output. So I feel like I've really got to know the podcast a lot better over the last 6 months, actually. So it's been really exciting to then see books come out on the back of this. And I think that this is going to make for really interesting chat, actually. I've come up with some questions that go into a bit about the books themselves and, you know, the process of that for you guys, but then also I wanted to look back a little bit on the last 6 years because it's been quite a journey, to be cliche about it, I think, since you first launched the first episode of the Editing Podcast back in 2019. Was it 2019?
We recorded them at the very back end of 2018. We batched that first season and then we launched it at the very beginning of 2019.
So a long time. A lot's happened in the world, a lot's happened in your careers, and I think this might just be a nice opportunity to go behind the curtain a little bit and tie it all together. So if that sounds good, then we'll just crack on. Well, then these books, if we'll begin there, they're a bit of an extensive archive, not just of the podcast, but of that journey that you've been on since that first episode. And I wondered how it felt, first of all, to see all those thousands of pages of transcripts and conversations and questions and pointers laid out in a physical format. You know, before it all came to print, you had lots and lots of digital documents working out what goes where and how it all came together. So Denise, let's start with you. I'm not going to call you mum on this. Denise,
fair enough.
How did that feel, seeing it all there? Did it kind of, was it overwhelming? Was it surprising?
I think, yes, that's one word that I think we would both use, is it felt quite overwhelming. We have transcripts of all the episodes and, you know, they're available. And when you look at them as a whole body of work, it's like, oh my goodness, there is a lot here. And to be honest, that almost did stop us from moving this project forward for a long time, because we've been talking about this for quite a while, and we just couldn't get our head round how to do it. We thought it would be a great idea to have a book, and it was the thought, well, how do we distill all this down into a book? How do we even go about looking through it all? How do we find the time to decide, you know, what's worth pulling out, what isn't? How do you filter through all the irrelevant stuff that goes, you know, the stuff where we've gone off at a tangent, or all the filler stuff? And it's been in our heads for quite a number of years that we wanted to do this. But I think overwhelm actually pretty much sums it up. Don't you think, Louise?
Totally agree. And I think, because what became obvious when we were looking at that body of transcripts was that it wasn't just that there was an enormous amount of extraneous stuff within episodes which fitted in with the series. It was also that there were nuggets that needed to be pulled from episodes where it wasn't immediately obvious.
Mm.
So you might have an episode that's on, I don't know, something like, that's totally dedicated to academic editing. And in there, there's just a bit about marketing, but it's not the episode you'd necessarily go to to find stuff for the marketing book. And it was, that's when it became, it started to feel like sort of you were climbing Mount Improbable, because it was just, it just felt like such a meaty task if we were going to capture everything.
Yeah, because we didn't want to just publish transcripts. That was, you know, we were clear about that from the start. We didn't want it to be a collection of transcripts, because that wouldn't be helpful, I don't think.
No. And also sometimes, you know, as we were editing the books, we did a lot of supplementary writing because we realized there was so much. Sometimes you capture a moment in a podcast, but you don't, you know, it's not going to be 3 hours long. And you think, I actually, if they were going to put that in a book, we need to explain a bit more. So although that bit didn't feel overwhelming. No. I think once we knew we'd done the extraction, that felt like we were going back to what we do, which is write and edit and produce content. So that felt more structured. But yeah, actually getting to the point where you've actually got something to work with was daunting. Yeah.
It's like, well, it's like sorting a drawer, really. Like that drawer in the cupboard that you've been ignoring for a long, long, long time and just keep filling with stuff and filling. And then you look at it being like, oh my God, how on earth am I ever going to organize this? And you have to just get it all out, put it all on the floor almost. Yes.
Yeah.
And just sort it through. And then you realise what's missing. You think, actually, I need a whole separate drawer for this, just this one little section. And it becomes very clear that, yes, there's a lot to do, but actually I can see it all in front of me and I know exactly what's going to happen.
Pretty much how it happened, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and from that, we don't just have the one book like you thought it was going to be. We have five different categories, I suppose. Foundations, growth, sustainability, legacy, and everyone's favourite, marketing, which we'll get into a little bit later, because I feel like there's definitely a point to be drawn there, despite how much everyone seems to hate marketing in the editing world. It's become a book in itself. I'd love to get into that later. But just to go back to that initial process, what was the most surprising aspect of it, Louise, if you've got anything that comes to mind? What really took you back when you were sifting through things?
I think it was, you've actually addressed it already. I think one of the first things that struck me was that there is space here for five core themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think we'd, you know, originally we thought like, let's do a book about the stuff that's in the podcast about being an editor, you know, and we hadn't really necessarily thought we might have a chapter on marketing and a chapter on growth and a chapter on legacy. And suddenly it was like, actually, if we put this into a book, one book, it's going to be that thick. That's a rubbish thing to say on a podcast. I'm holding my hands about 10 centimetres apart.
It turned into a talking volume at that point. Yeah. It's just, no one can get through
it. So I think that was a really sort of nice surprise that there was scope to actually create a series. And that then led us to think, well, the great thing about this is that if over the next few years we start to explore another particular something that's related, but again is a theme of its own, there's space to expand the series. And so, although this in itself, the culmination of it became like a project, it's not a finished project in a sense. There could be a volume six, there could be a volume seven.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So that was for me. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Denise?
Yeah, I think it was the realization. I think when we'd first talked about it, was about doing a book or maybe a couple of books. And I think the focus was, well, it will be a book about the business of being an editor and running an editorial business. And like Louise said, chapters within it. But when we actually got down to it and we realised, actually, there's so much scope here. It was surprising to us, really, that there was, that we had enough, more than enough content, and that a business book would be too generic. We had enough material to go deeper on different themes. It was a lovely surprise. Yeah.
Well, and it's really not surprising when you take it all as it is, which is almost 150 episodes, which is mad. I mean, you've kept going. You've got, you know, more and more niched down into what it is you can offer, because the more you talk about it, the more you realise, oh gosh, that's a whole other episode in itself. That's a whole, and then the same with the books. That's a whole other book in itself. You know, we can really, we don't want to skim the surface here. We want to give it breathing room that it needs to be able to help people as well, to give people the framework and the guidance that they might need as someone who's not even in the editing world, I suppose I'm an audio editor, which kind of helps. I'll take that. But as I've been, you know, fiddling with all the post-production, there's been a lot that's been helpful to me, actually. Yeah. I've been listening to it, and I'll listen to what the conversation is, or you get guests and whatever. And a lot of the points that you cover and the advice, I've written it down, or I've gone, gosh, and I've caught myself working later and catching what you've said, because it is useful and it's not wishy-washy. It's very practical. But I hope you know that it does also, it expands to other people as well, to other jobs, because I don't work I don't work in publishing, but I do take
like
it
creatives.
To...
That's absolutely
really lovely to know. Just to sort of come back and something, I don't think it was a surprise to me, but it was a kind of a really lovely validation, actually, a kind of really solid, you know, because you can see those books, you can hold them. You know, the podcast, it's audio content, and so it can sort of get, you know, it's got this invisibility to it sort of thing. And suddenly when you've got this solid thing made of
tangible paper,
tangible, it was a really lovely kind of homage to what we've done together and that journey we've taken. Because, you know, we're two editors, but we're two friends. Our friendship's grown throughout this. And so it kind of, it's just like this lovely sort of series of five green and yellow bluey things that kind of, for me, capture something that goes a little bit beyond just the editorial knowledge that we've tried to share and the experiences. It's also about this project that we've done together, this thing that we made and that we made together.
It's so true. And I tell you what struck me just as you were saying that is you've put your finger on something. Is like podcasting, it is that invisible sort of ephemeral, intangible, you know, thing that people can't always grasp the shape or the scope of it, because they do vary so much, don't they? Because like you say, some people do a series of a dozen episodes and that's all they ever do, and then other people are churning out 700 800 episodes and we're sitting somewhere in the middle at, you know, 150 over 6 years or
which
whatever.
Is no small feat, by the way, because it's not just you two plonking a microphone in front of yourselves and running away with it. This is there's a lot of prep that goes into it. There's a lot of scripting. I've seen it, and it's not just 150 episodes of for the sake of it. These are really thoughtful, you know, well carried out episodes that you should be incredibly proud of, and no one should just go, oh really, 150, oh, is that all? Like, I'd like to meet that person and have a bit of a stern word, to be honest. But I'm pleased to hear that, because it's you're right, I think the physicality of it, of having something in your hand to hold, the only other solution to that is to press your episodes to vinyl, and that might be the next step, we don't know.
We're going really retro. You heard it here first on that bombshell.
Maybe for episode 200 we'll do that one. So if we go back to the books, then Notes from the Podcast is what the series is called, divided into those five themes, as you so nicely put it, Louise: foundations, growth, sustainability, legacy, and marketing, all around editorial. Foundations feels like a fairly safe place for a new reader or a new listener to begin, but beyond that, is there an order that you'd recommend reading them in, Louise, or can they be maybe just prioritise per each editor or non-editor's interests or professional goals, for example?
I think 1 to 4, take out the marketing for a moment, because I really think that spans that works for anybody at whatever stage of their career is. There is marketing advice where we felt it was necessary to pop it in the other four. But that foundations, growth, sustainability, I can't even remember the order.
Sustainability and legacy.
That does feel like to us, I think we always felt that it was a logical order for not just maybe a beginner editor, but somebody who's maybe wants to use the books to just take a step back and review their career as a whole. So I suppose it depends what they want to do. I think for the beginner, that's absolutely the right place to start and to go 1 to 4. But I certainly know that in my own career, sometimes it's a bit like when you rear children, you know, like you have those moments where you just go right back to basics, getting the sleep routine in order. And so I think all four of the books could be useful to anybody at any stage of their career. But definitely we did have in mind this idea that for the person coming to the business as a new entrant, that they would start there and move on.
Or even for... I think also for somebody who maybe has made they may have been editing for a long time, but maybe in-house or in a, you know, in a salaried position, and are maybe they're very experienced yeah. editorially, but in terms of running
the business
a business,
yeah.
they're a beginner, you know, so foundations yeah. would be, you know, we're not talking about necessarily your level of editorial skill. It's where you are in building your editorial business. And we don't mean building yeah. in terms of building some kind of empire. We're talking about, you know, creating a business that's got a solid base, and, you know, you feel that you've got direction and...
Yeah, it's the things you learn yeah. along the way, yeah. really.
And that is a really good uh-huh. way. It's a really important thing to emphasise, actually, that for anybody listening who's wondering what those books are dealing with, we're not teaching people how to edit. We're very much focused on how do you be a successful independent business owner. These are the foundational things that you yeah. you should be having in place. These are the kind of things you should be doing if you want to grow that business. Mm-hmm. This is how you sustain.
Yeah. And so even if you may well have been freelance for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, but it's that difference we talk about quite often about working on the business and working in the business. You may have been so focused on just, you know, keeping your head above water, just getting clients in, that there's not been really a plan to it, and you've just been kind of muddling along. And this is an opportunity maybe for you to take a step back and review what you're doing. And it might be that it validates a lot of what you've already been doing, but then there may well be some gaps there that you think, oh, actually, I'm not doing that. I haven't thought about that. Or, you know, so yeah. there's different ways of approaching it, I think.
And one of the things that we keep hearing over and over again is that, you know, we have a lot of colleagues who have an absolute crap ton of editorial skill, but they're actually thinking about, and they know how to handle an editorial project in a really structured way, but they don't necessarily feel confident about approaching their business in a structured way, which is again why we like that idea of taking people on a journey through the series, apart from the outlier marketing, which it doesn't really matter where you are in your journey.
That's the umbrella. That's the overarching one, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not necessarily the foundations isn't for newbies and legacy isn't for old hats. You know, you can actually, and actually you did ask about this, Liv, at the beginning, you know, if somebody is wanting to think specifically about how they might leave a legacy, then of course that particular volume is going to speak to them more. But
there's still value to be found
absolutely.
In all of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, there is. And they do speak to each other, because it's actually quite difficult to think of how you might start to build a legacy if your business isn't sustainable, or if you haven't yes. if you haven't managed to get the sort of components in place that will enable you to get started and to keep yeah. going and to make that business sustainable, and to be able to be fluid and flexible enough and agile enough to recognize that we constantly need to be thinking about how we might change mm-hmm. things up and yeah. do things differently. Yeah. Because one thing we've learned is that while we may like and find great comfort in remaining quite static in our lives, because the status quo might suit us at any one time, the world doesn't around us doesn't behave like that. It's dynamic, yeah. and so that yeah. shape shifts, and we have yeah. to shift too.
Yeah, that adaptability is so important. Definitely.
And I think with the whole sort of legacy thing, I think there's something very attractive to people about leaving some kind of legacy behind. But I think for me, I always think, well, you know, you've got to get yourself sorted first before you can start giving back. You know, it doesn't all have to be in place, but you need to have a good, solid foundation yourself before you can give back and share confidently with others. It's a bit like that, you know, you put your own oxygen mask on before you help anyone else. It's that sort yeah. of thing that, you know, you need to be sure of yourself, because, you know, you might get asked difficult questions at some point, and you need to, you know your own position, yeah. I think, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes an awful lot of sense, actually, that kind of going from mm-hmm. one to the next, that 1 to 4, foundations to growth to sustainability to legacy, that feels like a very neat kind of stepping stone to mm-hmm. either strengthening an existing mm-hmm. business or growing something a little bit new. Like you say, I thought that was a great example, going from editing in-house to being either a full-time freelancer or a different kind of strain of editing. I think that was a really good point to bring up, because it's not a one-size-fits-all, and that's something I think the podcast certainly always tries to emphasize, is that, you know, whether through specific episodes or just by broadening the examples that you give, I think that's always been very clear that editing is quite a personal thing. I think everyone's approach is quite personal, but then also everyone's circumstances is very personal. It can, the great thing about that is that it can be tailored exactly to what you find interesting and what you're very good at, but that means that there'll always be something that can change, like you say, or something that you'll always have to suddenly flip and learn about and do whatever. So I think that 1 to 4 is a really great system to work with. But then marketing, the outlier, as you so neatly put it, the big umbrella, the big, you know, the shadow in the room that we can't quite seem to shake, it comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that it's the reason I would say is because it's so applicable to everyone. And that goes for all editors, all business owners, all freelancers. Marketing is the one thing that if you don't do it well, you're just going to struggle, no matter how good you are at the actual job that you're being hired to do.
Yeah.
And so, as you pointed out, Louise, marketing probably will pop up through 4 of those books, and then there's a much more detail in that 5th one. Is that kind of what people could expect, or does it go into something slightly different?
Absolutely. I think there are nudges to it, certainly in the other books, but that's where we've given it center stage. And I mean, Denise, throughout that phrase that we often use about the work you do on your business and in your business, and we often talk as well about the work, there's the work you do, and then there's the work you do to get the work you do. Yes. And that's what marketing's all about that. And it's something that it's weird actually, because Denise and I love it, but we recognize that we're not,
I hate it.
Yeah. I think we're quite atypical, I think, you know, Louise and I. Yeah.
So we always try to pay attention to it, but also to try to do it in a way that recognizes through the podcast episodes and in the books. You know, we wrote those books with the people who hate it in mind. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to preach to people who are like us. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't need guidance or support or even just comfort. And that's what we tried to do. We always try to think of ways to make it doable, to make it.
And also trying to let people understand and realize that marketing is a much broader thing than they might necessarily think it is.
Yeah.
I think everyone thinks of marketing as, oh, I've got to be in people's faces. I've got to, you know, I've got to be face to face, being pushy about my business, or I've got to write millions of blogs, or I've got to have a podcast, or I need to be chapping on people's doors all the time. Yes, all of these are part and parcel of marketing, but you don't have to do all of them. There is a way of marketing for everyone that is comfortable for them to do. And there are activities that may not sound like marketing on the face of it, but they absolutely are, because they're promoting your skills. And it's trying to help people to A, understand that, and B, find what works for them. That is the key principle, I think, for the marketing book, really, is to take the fear away and let people know that there's room for them to do marketing in a way that works for them, that means that they're likely to sustain that marketing effort.
Yeah. The books are technically self-published. This is kind of, is that accurate to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've both got experience with self-published work in different strains. Louise, I know that you've already published books around editing and other things. Denise, you've got lots of experience editing.
Yes.
I'm sure plenty of self-published books, and therefore have learned all the tricks and trades of what to do, and more importantly, what not to do. I wondered what that experience was like of editing and proofreading your own work for the first time, and if there was anything that was really sticking in your mind, being like, oh my God, we must not do this. We must not be guilty of this mistake I see coming up all the time in self-publishing books. I just wondered if there was anything that stuck in your mind while you were doing that process.
One thing that struck me about the process was the benefit of doing something together.
Absolutely.
So we took on different tasks. I did a lot of the additional writing and Denise would edit it.
Yeah.
And then I might proof something after she'd edited it. And so we tried to come at it like we often do, what we always do when we work together, that we're not constantly second guessing each other or sort of undoing each other's work. We're actually assigning specific tasks and in areas that we feel
we're stronger that, you know, strongest in.
Yeah.
Or that we like so, doing as well. Yeah, things that we like doing.
So like, just to give an example, there's this enormous glossary at the end of each book. And when we talked about doing that at first, I was like, oh my God, that sounds like such a bore. And Denise was like, I love doing things like that and getting it in order and making sure it's all consistent and stuff. And I was like, you have at it then. Yeah. I'll go and write some more prosaic stuff in earlier chapters.
But that totally speaks to my nonfiction, educational textbook type work where glossaries are just
part and parcel.
Second nature, they're part and parcel of it. So I'm totally comfortable with that sort of stuff. Love it.
Yeah, I really like writing. But I like being edited as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose that's to answer your specific question. The one thing we knew that we must do is that we must edit that work. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just because it was a complete mess when we extracted it, but it needed to be checked to make sure that. So Denise will know this particularly from when, because she's more used to than I am as a fiction editor. She's used to dealing with multi-author volumes. And you do sometimes need to be careful that a single voice doesn't creep in. And so sometimes when Denise was editing, she would say, that sounds so you. Yeah. But how about this instead? Mm-hmm. We were looking out for things like that. We were looking out for, things like, which is quite hard to do with your own work, but repetitious rhythm. So that there are various sort of stylistic tropes that can slip in when you're writing quite pithy, punchy fiction, like the rule of three. You know, we'd spot that sometimes, and we think, oh, let's just add a fourth point in there.
I mean, you don't want to eliminate it completely, but it's when it starts to become a bit like.
It's funny what difference that can make to that one extra word, because people do, especially if you're an avid reader, you do quickly catch on to like those rhythms. That's a really good way of putting it. Actually, I hadn't even thought about that.
But I think the other thing that we were conscious of is that we're not going for perfect. We're going for good enough. You know, we do have this. This was a project on top of our client work, on other editorial commitments we have for the institute that we're involved in, and personal lives. So it, you know, yes, there may be occasions where the rhythm is a bit repetitive, or we haven't quite, but tough. Mm-hmm. You know, we wanted to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you?
It was really important to...
Good.
Yeah, we did.
We really did. Once we realised how we could do this and we had something really that we thought was good, you know, and that...
And we have a system.
We have a system, it was like, oh, this is great. Let's just crack on with this. And we just ploughed through it, didn't we?
And sometimes we were sitting together on Zoom. So it was like being in even though Denise is in Glasgow and I'm here in just outside Norwich, we were sitting together on as if we were in a work hub or something. Mm-hmm. And I'd say like, oh, do you remember that, Denise, when we were doing foundations and I think we were quite near editing the first draft, and I can't remember why we were chatting about something and we both realised there wasn't a chapter on pricing. And we thought, if we've got to have a... How has that happened? You know, it's just like, Denise was right, I'll go off and I'll do this, I'll do that. And then I actually started just slotting it in, you know, making space for it within the manuscript and changing the table of contents. And then Denise went off to do... I mean, didn't go off. She was there on the screen, but she was doing something else while I started doing a bit of writing and she was pulling in bits and pieces. And so we would have this... really beautiful kind of remote online
workspace.
Working environment.
Yeah, we are half a country away. We might as well point that out. I mean, one of you's in Glasgow, one of you's not. Definitely not in Glasgow. Yeah.
It's a really good reminder. And it is something we mentioned somewhere in one of the books, that if you're feeling daunted by the idea of wanting to do a particular project, whatever it is in your freelance business, find someone to do it with.
Yeah.
Now, that's easier said than done, because it has to be the right person. But when you find the right working partner, it's a bit like living with someone, isn't it?
Totally.
You know, when you find the right partner...
It makes everything a million times easier. And it also helps you.
Yeah.
It sustains you through the points where you might otherwise just give up. And I think that's part of the reason why the podcast has lasted as long as it has, because it's a lot of work for one person.
Yes, it is.
And just having two different perspectives on it and two different sort of experiences, it just makes everything easier and much more fun. And we quite like each other as well, which always helps, you know.
She's all right.
It does help. Right. That does help. But then also I was going to touch on the fact that actually editing in the way certainly that both of you do, which is self-employed. Mm. Louise, you're not in-house, are you? You're also...
No.
It's very solitary, actually. It's just you and your desk and your computer and emails firing in with just work to be done and plowed out. It's a very solo... lonely experience, actually, after a little while. Mm-hmm. Certainly can be. And you might thrive in that environment, but everyone gets to a point where just not even any human interaction, but some working with someone can just break free from that kind of lonely headspace. And it can be really nice and really useful.
Yeah.
But then also just, I think it's especially special when it's two friends that can do it together. But I think what a joy that must have been to come together on something like this, to break free from two very... isolating work setups, and even half a country away, be able to have, like you say, a little office that quickly becomes, it's like you're across the desk. It doesn't matter that you're on away.
And I don't know, Liv, if you know the original, maybe Denise has mentioned it, but like I still remember when Denise and I were texting, because we used to have a little chinwags on Facebook Messenger and stuff, just about marketing, bouncing ideas around every now and then. And I remember Denise pinging me a message because we were both going to a marketing conference and together, and she was like, "Do you fancy doing a podcast?" And my head was going, because I was blogging a lot at that stage, probably more than her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was so more regularly than Denise, and I was thinking of all the time I didn't have to fit in this completely new thing, and how it was just like, I just didn't have the headspace for it. And as I was thinking that, my fingers must have been knowing the other bit of back of my brain feeling absolute FOMO, potential FOMO. So as I was thinking, no, I was like, yeah, that sounds typing. That sounds like a great idea. And the reason for it was that I couldn't bear the idea of Denise doing it with someone else. So it was. Oh, I did it for all the wrong reasons, in a sense. You know, I didn't want. I. You know, we have this burgeoning friendship, and the idea of her doing that something this new and fresh and amazing, although daunting for me, I didn't want her to do it with anyone else. So I just said, "Yeah."
I'm laughing. That's incredibly sweet.
But also, what she didn't know at the time was, if she said no, that was the end of it. I wasn't going to do it. Certainly wasn't going to do it with anybody else, and I knew that I wouldn't do it on my own. So it was an all or
thank
nothing.
Goodness she did.
Like lovely serendipity to it all, and you know, here we are all those years later, and it's funny. The other thing to mention is, Liv, that is I love about it, whether it's the actual episode recording itself or the writing of the books, is that, you know, when I'm feeling quite stressed out or not stressed out, that's wrong. If I've got a little bit of tension about me because I've got a lot of work on and I feel a bit crowded, often it can be too easy to think, oh, I haven't got time for the podcast, or I don't want to do the podcast. But I always find it incredibly refreshing, again, because of that partnership. And so it's just a great way to sort of blow the cobwebs off, and it reminds us how much fun it is to do it.
Yeah.
And
that comes across, though. That really comes across as not just as a listener, but as someone that edits it. And I don't take anything out. I just tweak it and polish it to make it sound as, you know, to make the sound quality reflect the quality of the conversation. It's how I like to think of it. And it's a joy to listen to. It's really enjoyable. And I've obviously touched on how much I've learned, but I've laughed a lot at it as well. And it's I think I've said to you, Mum, that it's the job I do when I don't want to do my other work. If I get a batch of these episodes to work through, I'll save them for days when I really don't want to do anything else, because I know I'll really enjoy it.
That's really nice.
But that partnership, you can't fake that chemistry. You can put a lot of work into what you say and how you'll structure the episode, but if you don't have the natural rapport that you guys have, it just doesn't sound as good. So you've locked it.
We have locked really, it, have. I think,
The future is bright, I think, is how I would sum up from my point of view. Five books down, almost 150 episodes at the point of recording out in the world. Lots more to be explored by the sounds of things, lots more to revisit or to readdress or to be adaptable to as the world around us shifts. And I think it's very exciting. If we were to end on a positive note, then can I ask each of you to reflect on perhaps a favourite episode or favourite moment from the last 6 years, making it sound like a long, long, long time.
There was one we did on was it on accents or pronunciations or something like that? Do you remember?
Was I just remember we had Rob Drummond on.
No, no, because I don't think I would have quoted from Brave, the movie.
Was it a fiction-based one about talking about
It might have been, yes, because I was you know how, Olivia, and you know how in Brave, one of the characters speaks in Doric? Yes. And people thought it was gobbledygook. It was unintelligible.
Yeah. Well, can I just say, the whole film was subtitled in the States because no one could understand. Well, they thought no one could understand any of it. Never mind the Doric.
I just remember that. I just remember laughing quite a lot when we recorded that. But now I can't remember which specific episode it was.
Oh, I have to go back and find that one. I haven't listened to that
one. I don't know why. It might be one of those things where it was in an episode that was nothing to do with pronunciation.
I find it quite difficult to pick a particular episode, but again, probably more a moment from an episode. I don't remember which one it was, but I remember us, I don't know what set us off, but we got like giggle death. And you know, when you're, and you think like, just got to get this done. And we just kept getting the giggles and it was really hard. And of course, at the time we didn't have you. So Denise was taking on the role of, if I was scripting and doing artwork, she'd be doing the audio editing and
uploading it all and stuff.
And uploading and all that stuff. And I was just really conscious that she was going to have so much to go through because to get out all the mess we kept making of it. But it was just a great reminder of what's not to love about something, a piece of work that you're trying to do that becomes a little bit more tortuous because you're having too much fun. we've had some fantastic guests, you know, that's not to under, we've had some amazing guests, and some of the episodes I think are most valuable to readers, or often listeners rather, are from people whose voices are fresh and talk about things that their skills beyond our skills. I also think I will never forget, I'm not sure if it's my favourite moment, but I will never forget the first episode we did, which we recorded 5 times because we had not learnt good enough is okay. And we thought that it had to be perfect and that if you stuttered or stammered, it didn't matter. And that anyway, something could be edited out. And it was 5 times.
Yes, it was 5. We were killing it. We were murdering it. I mean, it was basically...
We sounded more and more...
Exhausted.
Exhausted and bored with every time we did it.
Yeah.
But we were so afraid. Like, by record number 5, we were bored. Recording version number 1, we were terrified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we may have ended up doing number 3 in the end of it. I mean, I honestly don't know if we went with the 5th version because... We were killing it. We were flattening it by, you know.
Yeah, not killing it in a good way.
Oh, yeah. No. We weren't killing it. Yeah. We were murdering it.
Bludgeoning it.
Bludgeoning it over the head with a blunt object. Yeah. And just on the topic of ones that are memorable for extraneous reasons, is the episode during lockdown, coronavirus, when I had my in-laws staying with us and they were in the room upstairs.
That's right. You'd stop every 5 minutes. Can you hear that? Can you hear that? And it would be bang, 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 bang.
I know that floor and a mouse could create
absolutely
something. I mean,
it's terrible.
Yeah, it's a creaky one.
Yeah. That's Edith funny. And Les made it into the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, both thank you for your honesty and your reflections. I've really enjoyed coming
and having
a chat.
It's been so lovely having a professional interviewer. it's just amazing having someone who's got such great questions. And so thank you, Liv. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thanks. Do it again.
Yeah.
So then that that's it from us. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yes, and thank you so much for supporting us by listening. Until next time, she's been Louise.
She's been Denise, and the other one's been Liv. Join us again soon.
Bye.
Just before you go, actually, it's Liv again. I wanted to share with you a quick clip of the bonus episode that we've created on the back of this conversation. For any Patreon members of the Editing Podcast, there is a bonus episode that comes with every single release, and this one focuses on a couple of extra questions concerning the making of the books and the use of AI in the process. Have a listen to this.
We were wondering if we'd have to be feel quite limited about kind of how we approached the time frame of producing the books because of the sheer, you know, it might be like, it might take us a year. If we have to extract all the content for each theme ourselves from all those episodes to go and find that, it might take, we might be looking at a year per book.
Yeah.
Which just felt like, oh, this is just daunting. And when you said it, I mean, carry on the story, but I was just like,
it was such an eye-opener. And, and you know, like you say, Liv, in the editing world, it's a hugely contentious subject. And we've, in the institute that Louise and I are both involved in, we've been embroiled in big discussions about, does AI have a place in editing and writing? Mm-hmm. And there are extremely strong opinions for and against that, and everyone has their opinion, which of course they're entitled to. And there was a concern, we did have a concern, is this going to, we can't hide this, if we do use AI, we have to be absolutely upfront about it, because to hide it would be to suggest that we were doing something unethical with it.
You can listen to the full bonus episode as a member of the Patreon community for the Editing Podcast, and the link to that is in the show notes below. In the meantime, thank you once again for listening. We hope you'll join us again very soon. Bye.